Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hello listeners, I hope you had a good week. I hope people in the UK had a good bank holiday weekend. As promised last week, leading on from last week's show, I want to talk a bit about prioritising and risk assessment and time boxing when it comes to testing and planning and things like that. I spoke a bit before, a couple of episodes ago, about using acceptance criteria as a base for testing. That's the highest priority and then you spread out from there. And I think that there's sometimes merit to time boxing the exploratory testing you do. I think getting that focus right for 15 minutes, say, and just to see where you are at the end of that 15 minutes is quite useful. For example, I work a lot with Drupal, and sometimes we'll get security updates for modules or for core Drupal functionality, and the developers will review and send it over to me going, this affects this part of the site. We need to make sure that this custom function still works as we built it. And so I will test all that out. I think sometimes it's useful to time box that sort of testing. So you're testing all of it, but it cuts out all the fluff. Obviously, if you find something that takes you over that time, or if you realise a little bit you need to test, obviously you go over that. It's not you must be done in 15 minutes. But just that sort of artificial deadline to focus yourself a little bit is quite useful. I find it especially useful for writing and reviewing test plans and acceptance criteria. There's a blog post that I found from like 2011 about the 10-minute rule for test plans, and how if you focus yourself to write a test plan in under 10 minutes, it gets rid of all the fluff and leaves that for the test sessions, and the test plan just covers the core functionality, which I find quite useful, I think. And so a lot of my acceptance criteria just focuses on very core of what the functionality needs to do, and or at least it tries to. Sometimes I need to put more detail in, depends on the functionality obviously, but I try to narrow it down and try to cut it down so it takes me as short a time as possible to write out acceptance criteria, which is the base of my test plan. So I do find that quite useful. And if I know I need to test something specific but it doesn't fit in the acceptance criteria, I can just make a note, either a comment on the ticket or a comment on the subtask that I'll use for testing, or even just a note in the acceptance criteria saying, no, this will, I will also need to test, I will also test X, Y, and Z, so everyone can see that I have taken it into account. I just don't want to write it in acceptance criteria, because sometimes breaking the laws of grammar to fit things in is just, it's a lot of work for not enough gain, and I don't think it's worth it all the time. Anyway, that was kind of an aside. Acceptance criteria is the priority first. Then you've got to prioritise after that. Back in episode 15, I went through my prioritisation after acceptance criteria. And obviously I am correct in all things, but other people might do things differently. So you've got to decide that. You've got to decide how you prioritise what you're testing. Because if the worst things happen, for whatever reason, you can't fit everything in the time, if you are to a very, very tight deadline for whatever reason, you've got to make sure you hit the most important ones for the project, the client, or the product. If you're not an agency, you're not working to a client, just working for the company you're working for. And then if you find bugs, you've got to prioritise the bugs outside of the acceptance criteria. Because obviously if the acceptance criteria isn't being met, that's a blocking bug. But how about bugs after that? You've got to decide what counts as a blocking bug and what doesn't. Even though it might pass because it meets acceptance criteria, that doesn't mean there won't be bugs that block the story or block the feature, because there's a difference between something that passes the acceptance criteria and works fine and is fine to go live, and something that passes the acceptance criteria, but there's still an issue somewhere that you wouldn't want to put that in front of the client, whether it's a visual issue that or a bit of weirdness from integration with another bit of the site, something like that, that you then need to maybe talk to a developer or the PM or even the client about prioritising. And then after that, there's bugs that don't block the story at all, but are still there and will need to be fixed at some point, or the client will want them fixed at some point, which again, you then have to prioritise those as well. And that partly depends, I guess, on how you tackle bugs. I know there's some agile teams that don't actually differentiate that much between blocking bugs and bugs. Basically, that they'll fix all bugs that they can, or they'll close the bugs if they can't fix them, or if they choose not to fix them for whatever reason, in every sprint, just so there's not loads of bugs hanging around. Some people have space at the end of a sprint to fix bugs while the client is doing UAT. Some have a bug fixing sprint within the project. I mean, there's different ways of handling it depending on what you want to do and what's right for the circumstances that you're in. But you still need to prioritise within that. And then you've got to assess the risk and priority of that bug. And so you've got to think about the risk of fixing it versus the risk of keeping it as it is, which would be easier and safer when it comes to the integrity of the project. The complexity of the bug and the possible fix, if it's going to be one of those bugs that's really hard to nail down and fix, is that something that you've got the time and budget to do compared to the implications of leaving the bug there, which again, the timings of the project and the budget of the project all fold into that. Recent example, we work again with Drupal, as I said, a bug that we came across recently, pretty much the only fix we could find for it involved upgrading a module to the dev version, which is the version of the module after the latest stable version. So there's some risk attached to it there. It wasn't widely used because everyone was using the stable version of it. Hadn't been crowd tested anywhere near as much as the stable version had. So it was a big risk. The site the bug was on is a large site with a lot of users, both internal and public members of the public as well. So upgrading that module to the dev version we thought was too high risk. The bug was relatively small. There was a workaround. It wasn't the best, but there was a workaround. So, and the workaround would only affect the internal users of the site, and not many at that. Not the public users of the site. So we had some time dedicated to investigating alternative fixes and how long that would take. And in the end, we decided that we would leave it as is, would explain to the client. They agreed that the risk was too great and all the alternatives would take a lot of work and more time than they were willing to dedicate to fix that bug. They were quite happy to keep that and use the workaround. On the flip side, a client asked us to spend some time changing how some out-of-the-box Drupal functionality works around admin menus. And for us, when we first saw the request come in, we marked it as a fairly low priority because it's just how Drupal works, and it wasn't like it wasn't unusable, it was usable, and we knew we needed to do training for them anyway because they'd never used Drupal before, and it was possibly complex to do. But the client prioritised it and was willing to possibly lose some of the lower priority features to get this working. So we did it. We made the changes they want. They were very happy with it. We contributed those changes back to the community, so other people could use it if they found it useful. And that was quite nice, which to me highlights conflicting priorities from our point of view and the client's point of view, and how sometimes it's good to get the client in early on this kind of problem when it's a, we could fix it maybe, but we're not sure. Or even a, well, this is how it works straight out of the box. We can try and fix it, but it will take some time and you have to choose between this and something else. I mean, some clients will demand everything and everything is the top priority, but I think bringing clients in early on the problem and engaging with them is, most of the time, you're likely to get as we have with our clients, either agree all or a compromise or a conversation about what they're trying to do and why they've requested these things. And then we can work with them to give them the best possible result for the circumstances they're in of the project and the other pressures going on. Like if they've got external deadlines from shareholders on their end, for example, things like that. So I think for me, risk assessment and prioritising is mostly about having conversations with people, whether that be the developers or PMs or clients or a mixture of them. Because sometimes I do find a bug and I'll kind of hem and haw over whether it's a blocking bug or whether it's not. Sometimes I've gone to a developer and gone, I'm not sure if this blocks the story. And they've gone, no, I think it blocks the story. I think we should fix it before we put it live. And sometimes I've gone, no, I agree, I don't think it is, but it's something that we definitely want to fix. So mark it as a high priority, or it's one where like, I don't know if we can fix it. It's probably not worth it for the time. Put it in as low priority and we'll talk to the client or something like that. And so I think for me, learning to prioritise and learning risk is something that I'm doing through conversations mostly, because obviously I'm not a developer, but I think I'm slowly getting where I can look at a bug and go, this looks like it'll be awkward to do, or this doesn't look like it's worth us doing, but I'll log it anyway because it's a bug, but I'm more likely to prioritise it based on what I know from conversations with developers. And of course, sometimes you take a risk and it doesn't work, but that's kind of the whole point of taking a risk, isn't it? You never know if it's going to work or not. And sometimes, like the anecdote before where we contributed back to the community, it ends up being good for everyone. I was meaning to wrap it up here, but as an aside, while I was recording this episode is called Risky, I have had the theme tune to the podcast Risk stuck in my head. And so I thought, time for an impromptu podcast recommendation. It is everything this podcast isn't. It's a storytelling podcast hosted by an American guy called Kevin Allison. And it's true tales that people didn't think they'd dare tell to other people, told live more often than not. It is most of the time not suitable for work or young people. It is shocking and touching, and it's just a really good podcast to listen to if you're into storytelling. So yeah, Risk, go check it out. And now I'm going to wrap this up. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join me in a week's time for the next episode. In the meantime, please do check out letstalkabouttests.xyz, where all show notes will be posted. You can contact the show at letstalkabouttests@gmail.com and follow the show on Twitter at letstalktests. My Twitter is @gem_hill. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review on iTunes, it always helps. Thanks, and bye!